state lawmakers are combing through Governor Scott Walker's biennial budget proposal. In its more than 600 pages, the governor has laid out his vision for the state over the next 2 years. That vision includes some big changes for a number of state agencies, which have caused some controversy and debate across the political aisle and across the state. So today, we'll speak with two lawmakers from Western Wisconsin to get their takes on the budget, and we'll open up the phone lines for you, the listener, to chime in as well during the West Side Legislative Roundup. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to introduce my guests. Joining us by phone is Republican State Representative Romaine Quinn of Rice Lake. Romaine was elected to the state's state legislature's 75th Assembly District last November, and before that, he was the mayor of Rice Lake and a city council member there. Romaine Quinn, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rich.
Thank you. And also joining me in studio is second-term Democratic State Representative Dana Walks of Eau Claire. Dana was elected to the 91st Assembly District in 2002 and was reelected last November. He's also an attorney in his spare time in Eau Claire. Dana Walks, thank you for joining us.
Morning, Rich. How are you?
Good morning. Very well. Yourself?
Good.
Good. Listeners, we'd like you to join the conversation. As I mentioned before, the number is 1-800-228-5615. You can call in with questions for the lawmakers. You can also offer a comment. 800-228-5615. So some big issues, and I'm hopeful that we'll get through the whole list of questions here, but if not, we'll just have to do a follow-up some other day. But first of all, the UW system, some of the biggest news budget-wise coming in that department. And a full disclosure, I want to say first off that Wisconsin Public Radio is a part of the UW system, UW Extension, and there are cuts to our agency in this budget as well. Full disclosure. So with that, I want to start with the UW system officials, chancellors, and even some Republicans like Assembly Speaker Robin Voss have said that the $300 million cut to the UW system proposed by the governor is a little big. So first off, I'll start with Dana Walks, and I'll go to Romaine Quinn after that. Would you like to change the governor's recommendation, and how?
Well, Rich, to be quite frank, this governor's budget with reference to education is woefully inadequate. Frankly, it's short-sighted and will functionally bring a halt to economic development in the state. Much of the industry in our state is created through the universities, through research, through development, through education of our citizens. For instance, just here in Eau Claire alone, you can take a look at JAMP Industries that came directly out of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. A $300 million cut to our university system is devastating. To be quite frank, that kind of a cut will damage the brand that this university system has. Up till now, Wisconsin has been known to have a really good university system. Just in Madison alone, there's about 9,300 jobs in Madison alone just related to research. A cut of this nature is devastating. And for what purpose? Is this so that people have $5 off of their property taxes? It's ridiculous. We need to be investing in education. If anything, we should add to the budget for the university system, not take away $300 million. It's just ridiculous.
Romaine Quinn, your thoughts. We had Speaker Voss saying that he thinks the cut is a little big. He also had some other concerns about the authority model. But what's your take? Do you think it's too big? Do you think it's just right? Or do you think it needs to be bigger?
Yeah, I think that can kind of play hand in hand with the authority model. Unfortunately, if there is savings to be had, which I think there will be, at least in the long run, they're not going to be realized right away. So that puts us in a predicament of, you're cutting based on a two-year period where we're not allowing the universities to necessarily save in that same time frame. So the $300 million number right off the mark is a pretty substantial number. And I was fortunate enough to sit down with an hour with Chancellor Blanker Madison. And I have a two-year UW colleges, Barron County, right in my district, and mm-hmm. I've been with the dean there for quite a few hours here and there. And so for some campuses, yes, it is unmanageable, especially if you divvy it up 13% across the board and play it even, so to speak. I think there are certain institutions whether you look at Madison or certain campuses that can better buffer some of that cut, sure. But again, it's entirely up to the President Cross and how that will play out. I think it's still a little preliminary in terms of how bad it would be for campuses in particular. I know Chancellor Blank is waiting to hear back from some of her department heads on, you know, what would a 2%, a 4%, a 6% cut look like. You know, it doesn't make sense if all of a sudden kids can't get into core classes and it's taken them 5 or 6 years to graduate as opposed to 4 years. So that doesn't do anybody any good. So I think there are cost savings that could be had with that, you know, the going towards a model of more autonomy for the university system. But again, I would agree that this number right off the bat, you know, looking at it at face value, is pretty significant over a two-year period. Now, that being said, you know, talking with some of the people at UW, they're not necessarily opposed to a cut or trying to find ways to continue to do things better. It's just a matter of making sure that it's manageable in terms of its size and in terms of its time.
Now, I want to stay with you, Romaine Quinn, and I'll go back to Dana Walks. But recently, and this this is at UW-Eau Claire specifically, it was announced that there's going to be an incentivized separation kind of a situation where administration at the college or university here will offer half a year's pay to people that are of retirement age, that are vested in the Wisconsin retirement system, basically a buyout for them to retire early. That went out to 325 people. The chancellor, James Schmidt, says there's no way he can let that many people go. But still, long story short, he says they're facing, by the legislative fiscal bureau's estimates, something like a $12 million budget shortfall that would start July 1st. Downsizing the universities, is that necessary? What are your thoughts on this what seems to be an emergency situation for the folks at the UW-Eau Claire?
Right. And I know, I'm not sure particularly what percentage they're basing that $300 million off of. If that would be their share that they've received confirmation from President Cross or others, because I know a lot of them were looking at proposals that would take their lion's share of the 13% and so on. But, yeah, there's a perfect example of where obviously certain campuses can handle certain cuts better than others. You know, 13% at UW-Superior is a lot different than 13% at UW-Madison. Now, I'm not saying, again, justifying that 13% number overall, but there's going to be direct effects. And, again, if I think there are ways where we can reprioritize classes, curriculum, and to do some of those things to make sure, because, you know, talking with some of the different professors in certain departments, when you look at over time, for instance, I went to UW-Eau Claire, and actually I got to see Representative Walks. He probably doesn't remember me, but I was in one of his talks when I was a student on campus. When you look at some of these departments and how they've grown over the years, I think there are ways where we can honestly look and prioritize. For instance, I was a political science major. When I went there, I had a lot of electives to choose from on the 400-level classes. That's a great thing. They have a really strong program, and all those options were wonderful for me because I could pick out particular classes that I was directly interested in. Are there certain campuses that may look and say, okay, do we really need to offer all of these classes that meet the same requirement? I think we could have an honest look at some of those things. But again, when budgets are tight, I think we can have that conversation. Now, in terms of just, you know, we always say, you know, we should be reinvesting in education, and that sounds great, but let's tie it to something to show that the money is going to certain things that actually show improvement in the system. You know, instead of cutting $300 million from the UW system, you know, we want to invest another $100 million. Where does that go? How does that play out? I think we need to get to a point where we can see the value for the dollar, and I know what's there, but we really need to connect that more to the taxpayers so we can justify the money that we're spending on a lot of these things.
Dana Walks, your thoughts on the news from UW-Eau Claire. You know, some people are even questioning whether or not the numbers from the Fiscal Bureau, those are based on last year's, how they divided the cuts from the last biennial budget. So the numbers are likely to change, but your thoughts on the letters that went out or that are going out?
Well, I think Chancellor Schmidt is trying to be innovative. I think he's doing the best he can with what is functionally a disaster. I am the, just so you know, I'm the ranking member on the Colleges and Universities Committee in the Assembly. And as such, I'm getting phone calls from people from all of the universities in the state, all of the public universities in the state. And one of the problems that we're going to have with the cut like this is that we will not be able to bring in quality professors. I know one chancellor who recently told me, not from Eau Claire, but recently told me that of the top 10 people that they had earmarked for a certain position, the first seven of those 10 turned the position down. What's happening is our brand, the brand of the University of Wisconsin system, is being damaged. Professors don't want to come here and teach anymore because of these cuts, because there's no stability here. And you got to wonder just what is the value of the autonomy? I mean, Robin Voss talked openly the other day about not going forward with autonomy because he didn't like what the universities were proposing to do with autonomy.
Could you be more specific?
Well,
it had to do with tenure, right?
Yeah, there was an article in the Milwaukee Journal, I think it was Friday, might have been Saturday, where Robin Voss was talking about how if the universities don't do what he wants with regard to autonomy, then perhaps they won't have it. So, it's almost a shell game. Just what exactly is Wisconsin's plan for our university system? One other thing I need to tell you, make sure you're aware of, is that this budget also eliminates all oversight of private for-profit universities. Private for-profit universities will no longer, by this budget, have any oversight at all.
It would get rid of a state board of, 12 members or something like that?
Yeah, there's a board that makes sure that if you take college classes at some private for-profit university, that those classes are actually valid classes and will lead to a valid degree. We'll be the only state in the United States that has no oversight. So what exactly is going on here? Are we looking at privatizing our universities? Just what exactly do these people have in mind? I mean, but just, I cannot emphasize strongly enough that this $300 million cut will devastate the brand of our university.
Romaine Quinn, what are your thoughts on Speaker Voss's statements regarding the public authority, the flexibilities that universities have been calling for, flexibilities in how they manage their finances or how they pay for building projects for years, decades even? Robin Voss was okay with that idea, but recently he had some reservations when the Board of Regents basically said that they're not going to do anything, make any drastic changes to the tenure structure or to shared governance.
Sure, and I can't speak for the speaker at all, and I guess I'm not aware of his comments or that article that recently came out.
That's
so
fine.
I can't speak specifically to him on what his thoughts are. To me, just on its face value, it would only make sense to give the people that are managing, whether it's the DNR or the transportation budget or those that are managing those individual campuses, to have more authority to run those as efficiently as possible. I think there are ways where we can create those efficiencies, and you touched on a couple, about having more autonomy over its building projects. Right off the top, the Department of Administration takes 5% of every project. Does that make sense? A lot of these universities want the ability in terms of, they're purchasing their goods. They don't want to be told where they have to buy this or that from or how to obtain things. And so I think there are ways that we can allow them to save real dollars. I think we should be trying to develop a better plan where the universities can show more pointedly that, yes, this would save me over 5-10 years, X amount of money based on what I'm doing today. So I think there's a valid argument to be made there. But again, I can't speak on the speaker's concerns by any means, but I think there are legitimate reasons and taxpayer savings to be had by looking at that particular issue.
I want to remind the listeners that we're talking about the state biennial budget with two state lawmakers from Western Wisconsin. I'm joined by Democratic State Representative Dana Wachs of Eau Claire. He represents the 91st Assembly District. And Republican State Representative Romaine Quinn of Rice Lake joins us by phone. He represents the 75th Assembly District. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615 to get your questions and comments in and on the air. Real quick, final question with regard to the UW system, because we've got a lot of other things to try to discuss during this hour. But the Wisconsin idea, the mission statement of the UW system, should it be changed? And I'll start with Dana Walks.
Well, you know, it's just we have forever had a system where there was a quest, a search for truth and knowledge. The very idea that that was going to be somehow taken out, it's beyond ridiculous. It just flat out is. We shouldn't be cutting our university system. We should be investing in it. Our neighboring states are doing just that. Our neighboring states have surpluses in their budget. Minnesota has a $1 billion surplus. Iowa has a $2 billion surplus. Indiana has a $1 billion surplus. They're investing in education. Had we had a functioning tax program in this state, we would be in the same position. But this governor has squandered whatever savings he managed to get, and we just don't have tax policy that makes any sense in this state.
Romaine Quinn, the Wisconsin idea, the mission statement of the UW-Madison and the UW system as a whole. There were some changes proposed, kind of that proposal kind of went back when there was some outcry. What are your thoughts on changing the UW system, the Wisconsin idea, to include something like to have the university be more responsive to the business the businesses across the state?
Right, and I think that's that balancing act that you see that's kind of playing out right now. You know, the state's been investing heavily in our technical education system to try and train the workers of today, of jobs that are open today. And I think all institutions, whether it's K-12, university, a technical system, can always do a better job at finding the balance of, you know, are we turning out students today for jobs that will be there tomorrow? But in terms of changing the model, I don't see the need. I'm not sure where that came from or the controversy that stirred up there over a couple of weeks. But, yeah, I don't see a need for changing that by any means.
Gotcha. And speaking of balance, again, and we've got a caller that wants to get on with a question about the UW system. That balance, it seems like there's more of a focus towards technical colleges. There's the Wisconsin Fast Forward, I think, some kind of a job training program that was introduced in the last budget by the governor. It seems like there's more focus on two-year technical college degrees than there has been in the past. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Or either. Neither, I should say. Romaine Quinn.
Sure. And I think if you look at my district, more of a rural northern district, a lot of us up here are heavy in manufacturing. And so I have manufacturers right in the city of Rice Lake that would hire 50 people tomorrow, but they can't find the machinists, the welders, the people to operate some of this equipment. And so, and these aren't minimum wage jobs either. So it absolutely breaks my heart when there's people looking for work and we can't connect them between getting the skills and being in a decent job where they're okay going to work every day because they can support their family. So I think that initiative is a great thing. I know many people in programs up here right at WITC, right in my district, that have taken advantage of these things to try and get into some of these jobs. Perfect example, Kmart went out in Rice Lake. There's some women in the service counter that went to school. They're now CNC machinists making twice as much in a local factory than they ever did at Kmart. So I think it's a good emphasis because there's the need right now. But again, that comes with a balance, too. You don't forget the needs of other industries or other needs across the state and other parts of the economy. But I think right now there was a great need, and the governor saw that, and the legislature put that emphasis, which I think is a good thing, an important step at this point.
And Dana Walks, do you think that there's more, that the balance between four-year education versus two-year technical education has been shifted in favor of the technical education, and is that good for the region?
Well, we really do need both systems. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we should recognize that this budget also reduces funding for technical colleges and worker training program.
Sure.
But clearly, we need both. in terms of long-term development, we need as many college grads and PhDs and master's degree folks that we can possibly get. But we clearly do need to have a good functioning technical college system as well.
We've got our first caller and that we'll get on the air. Joan in Eau Claire, you're on. And Willem in Colfax, hang tight. We'll get to you in just a bit. But Joan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thank you. What better justification regarding the justification of UW expenditures, what better justification could you possibly have than the education of Wisconsin citizens? How could the shrinking of the UW system possibly benefit Wisconsin citizens? The answer, of course, is that it doesn't, and it won't. The UW cuts are all about Walker's political ambitions and dismantling public education in our state. Unfortunately, but true. And thank you so much for letting me speak.
Thank you, Joan. And the number to call in is 800-228-5615. Romaine Quinn, thoughts on Joan is making an argument that I've heard and read up before on some of the more left-leaning websites that has Governor Walker, paints him as using these kind of cuts as a political springboard. Do you agree or disagree?
Sure, and I don't necessarily buy that portion of it, just in the sense of, I mean, I don't hear Republican presidential candidates ever running around saying, yay, we cut university systems across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a Republican talking point by any means. But, I mean, you can look at the issue no matter what side of the coin it is. I would hate to believe anybody's goal behind any of this is to dismantle public education, because I certainly don't want to see that happen. But again, the budget focuses on continually streamlining government, cutting the footprint of government, reducing the tax burden, and continuing reform. Now, again, how far do you want that to go? And that's why we're able to have this debate. And again, that's why it's just a proposal, because again, there's a lot of us on both sides of the aisle, Representative Walks and mine. Again, that's sort of a concern about, you know, for instance, the size of this cut, or where should we be prioritizing the limited resources that we do have. So I guess I don't necessarily buy the talking point that, you know, it's a political game, but there's legitimate reason for some concern. Yes, I would agree with her in that sense.
All right. Thank you. And Dana Walks.
You know, if this governor would simply take the federal Medicaid money, that alone would plug an extra $350 million into this budget. Right there. There would be no cut, potentially, to the university system. We should be increasing investment in colleges, not decreasing them by $300 million. It has taken decades. It has taken decades to build this university system to the point that it is. And this guy wants to dismantle it functionally.
Well, with that, let's take our first break on the west side. You're listening to two state lawmakers from western Wisconsin. We're talking about the state budget. I'm joined by Republican State Representative Romaine Quinn of Rice Lake and Democratic State Representative Dana Walks of Eau Claire. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. And when we get back, we'll talk about the DNR, and we'll start off with a call from Colfax. Willem, hang tight. This is the west side.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio is provided by the Lee Esther News Fellowship, providing early career journalists the opportunity to learn hands-on reporting, editing, and broadcasting in a professional setting as part of the WPR News Department.
The L.A. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire has a wide variety of opportunities for all ages during spring break for the Eau Claire School District, March 23rd through 27th. Information at Youth Services, by phone, and online at ecpubliclibrary.info.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in this Monday morning. We're talking about Governor Walker's budget proposal and other legislation that's kicking around in Madison. I'm joined by two state lawmakers from our region, Democratic State Representative Dana Walks of Eau Claire. He represents the 91st District. He joins us in studio. And Republican State Representative Romaine Quinn of Rice Lake represents the 75th District, joins us by phone. The number to call in, 800-228-5615. We're going to switch gears. We just talked about the UW system. Now let's get into some talk about the DNR. And Willem and Colfax, you're on the air. Thanks for hanging with us.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just as a general comment, I think a lot of the things in this budget are not really budgetary items, but ideological items.
Policies.
And I think, like the Mr. Walk said about the Medicare money, that's money that we, as you know, working people, that money is withheld from our checks. And, you know, the money that we send to the federal government, this is money that should be returned to the state. So that's purely an ideological thing that Governor Walker is doing. It has nothing to do with any fiscal responsibility. And that's also what concerns me about the cuts to the DNR. A lot of the science positions are not funded by taxpayer dollars. This is what George Meyer said, former secretary of the DNR, that a lot of those science positions are funded by hunting and fishing licenses and other fees, parks fees and things like that. So that's another, it's not a budgetary item, it's an ideological item. And my concern is that other states like Minnesota and Iowa have, before they've gone whole hog into the strip mining, sand mining, frac sand mining, they have done studies to, because, you know, the government is supposed to protect the health and general welfare of the people. So we need to know what we're getting into before 5 years from now when there's, you know, 200 mines in the state. Someone says, well, maybe we should have thought about this before we did it. It seems like the prudent and conservative thing to do would be to study the effects of this mining and how it's changing the very nature of our area before we go whole hog. And I think the thing that often is overlooked is the negative economic input. I talked to Senator Moulton last week at a listening session in New Auburn, and he said it creates 1,000 jobs. This 1,000 jobs is a constant number I hear, but how many jobs has it destroyed? How many housing developments aren't happening? How many electricians, plumbers, carpenters, how many, there's a business in Bloomer that left the area, plastics factory, because of the concern over air quality and how it would control their production. So when we talk about the economy of this, sure, it creates jobs, but how many jobs does it destroy? And what will our future look like when 50 years from now the oil is gone, the hills are gone, and then what? And we're supposed to be concerned about future generations. Let's, you know, actions speak louder than words. And I think what's driving this whole sand mining boom is the money that's being put into our political system. And our governor, he is actually, when he was in London on a trade mission, that's what he said about Wisconsin. We have cheese and sand. So you know where he's coming from.
All right. Thanks so much, Willem. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Let's start off with, there's a lot to chew on there. Let's start with, I think I accidentally lost a caller. Let's start with the cuts to the DNR Science and Research Department. You know, that section within the DNR, and the governor's office has said, you know, it's about streamlining the government, making agencies smaller, more responsive, et cetera. Some people have said that this is some kind of a political payback for an unflattering report about the iron mine that this department put out. But, Romaine Quinn, your thoughts on it's a proposal to eliminate 18 positions, 18 research and science staff at the DNR. Is it necessary?
Sure. And I think part of this, and what I always go back to is, you know, as representatives, you know, Representative Walken and Representative myself don't necessarily know how the department functions day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather leave those decisions, if there are going to be any cuts, whether you talk about the UW system or the secretary of the DNR, on where to best do that. So I think from a budgetary standpoint, the gentleman was right in terms of we should be getting policy decisions out of the budget and look at more of the fiscal note. And so if there is going to be a reduction of, like right now it's currently $45 million, that's about 3.9% of the DNR budget, so that'll equal about 67 staff overall. I think that should be handled within itself. I don't think we should be on the outside saying you should cut specifically these 18, you know, these 40 from this particular area. But I will note, you know, during the secretary's testimony, you know, she mentioned that there's researchers and biologists and hydrogeologists, I mean, in all areas.
Sure.
Of the DNR.
Most staff have degrees in biology and whatnot.
Right. And so it's not, for instance, often these 18 people are gone, and now no one is qualified to do any research anymore. So I think what its intent is doing is putting the emphasis of science not just on its own out there, but bringing it into all these various departments to really focus on the issues that the state deals with day in and day out. So I think there's a balance to be found. But, again, I would like to take a step back and allow the individual secretaries and basically managers of these areas to best find how to make their departments more efficient. That's where my only concern is.
So will you be pushing to make that change, insert some amendments to say something to that effect?
Right. I don't think it's our business to run, I mean, to micromanage these departments. And I think a lot of people do agree with me on that, on our side of the aisle. And I can't speak for the other side. But again, I think that's just good policy overall. Why have managers if you don't let them manage how they see fit?
Okay.
And if they don't do a good job and, you know, they're targeting certain areas that we may disagree with politically or philosophically, you know, then you change leadership. So I think there's ways to get through some of these things without having them look so detrimental and get past these docking points of all of a sudden we're getting rid of all science in the DNR, things like that.
Right. Dana Wachs, your thoughts. It started out as the 18 positions within this research and science area, but also, you know, overall the cuts of 60-some FTEs, full-time equivalent positions within the DNR. Is that going to gut the agency?
Well, it's just, you know, there's been kind of a long policy with this administration, really not policy, but payback is what it is. This administration has handcuffed the DNR in terms of high-capacity well analysis. This administration now in this budget proposes to eliminate 66 science and education positions within the DNR. I mean, we have a long history in this state dating back to Leopold and a long history in this state of making policy decisions based on science, particularly in the environmental area. So I'm not sure there is policy here. I think it's payback, and I don't know how else to explain it. But this governor does not want scientists in a position to be judging environmental standards and the like.
But if cuts have to be made, I mean, they have to be made to all departments, including the DNR. So are you saying that there shouldn't be any cuts to these staff or that they wouldn't be warranted, that zero cuts?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what cuts are warranted in the DNR exactly, but here we're talking about, you know, eliminating all public funding to the state park system, you know, increasing park fees by 12%, freezing the stewardship land purchasing efforts, removing citizen oversight by converting the Natural Resource Board and Conservation Congress from policy-making entities to advisory roles. So, you know, it's really stripping the DNR of its basic functions. I mean, do we want to have a DNR or not? I mean, that's really where we're getting.
Hmm. Romaine Quinn, that's another thing that I wanted to bring up was the DNR, the Natural Resources Board, citizen-led council that helps set some of the policy for the DNR. Of course, the secretary can also set policy as well. The governor can suggest or urge them to set policy, but they would become advisory only. Is that necessary?
Yeah, I think when Representative just mentioned a couple issues, you know, I don't think necessarily the sky is falling for the DNR. I mean, we talk about, you know, state park aid and raising the fees. You know, the fees are supposed to go up $2 and $3 accordingly. You know, you look at 3.9% reduction, that's 67 people. Well, that's out of 2,642 people currently at the staff. You know, the DNR, since the new secretary has taken over, has been implementing numerous policies in terms of lean principles and making sure they're accountable. And so I think there's always room for improvement. So I don't think to say that they can't withstand any change would be accurate. But in terms of the board itself, I guess philosophically, on its face, it's hard for me to justify having people unelected writing rules that basically have the same effect as law. But how would it play out? Maybe different. I guess I'm not sold at this point. Now, this is maybe necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still open to the idea, just in terms of that face value of we have people in positions who are not accountable to the general public who are making rules that are basically law.
Aren't again, the secretaries unelected?
Conversation.
The Secretary Stepp is an unelected person, and she sets some of the policy, too. How's that different?
Sure. Well, and again, I think it's worth a discussion to have. I mean,
whether it's her or whether it's, you know, various boards, I know they do a lot of different governing. I think as much responsibility as possible in terms of rulemaking should always come back to the legislators.
Gotcha.
You know, I think we have a habit of passing legislation and then walking away, but the rules that are written for that legislation sometimes play out in a different intent than what we originally thought. So I think it's always a good habit to constantly bring the decision-making back to those who are actually elected.
Electability or electable, elected accountability. Gotcha. So we've got a call right now, gentlemen. This is Bill from, he's calling from Eau Claire County. Bill, you're on the air. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. I have three questions or three things I want to bring up. One is the Nature Conservancy, the idea that in the past Wisconsin has been a leader in putting public lands in public hands.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we no longer fund that, that what will happen is that those lands will be bought by realty speculators, turned into condos, and some of the most beautiful remaining land in the state of Wisconsin will never be set foot on by the public again. Number two, I was wondering what the governor's plan for northern Wisconsin is for jobs now that Gogebic has pulled entirely out of the state, didn't even renew their lease. It seemed that 1,000 jobs disappeared, and I know that the right to work won't help anyone in northern Wisconsin because there's no unions up there to begin with. And the third thing I want to mention is just a comment that the cutting off of the heads of the people who are essentially department heads and science and scientists for the DNR is sort of like hospitals saying, yeah, we have a hospital, but we don't allow any doctors to practice in here. How many people are going to go there after that? Those are the things I'd like you to address. Thank you very much. I'll take my comments off the air.
Great. Thanks so much, Bill. 800-228-5615. We can still squeeze some call questions in before the top of the hour. Dana Walks, there's a lot, again, to chew on there. Three, kind of a mixture of comments and questions, but the land stewardship, you already spoke to that a little bit. But also, you know, this with GTEC pulling out, I'm interested to hear if there's been any discussion among lawmakers of what now.
Well, you know, that iron mine, we talked until we were blue in the face about the fact that that iron mine was never gonna work because it was in complete. It would fly in the face of many federal regulations in terms of water quality and the like, and indeed that's where it ended up. But we don't get listened to because we're Democrats, and so I don't know what the plan of this governor is for jobs in the North. I just have no idea. There really doesn't seem to be a policy in that regard. And in terms of right to work. The caller was talking about right to work.
Mm-hmm.
That bill was not conducive for building a robust economy. If you want a robust economy, you want to put as much money as you can in the hands of the middle class. It's the middle class folks that buy new refrigerators and buy new cars and buy new houses. This right to work policy, this Act 10, all of that has been stripping money out of the middle class and watching our economy screech to a halt while Minnesota's is going through the roof. It's kind of hard to do. And this governor doesn't have policies that help the middle class. He just doesn't.
And Romaine Quinn, 2 points there that I'd like you to follow up on, too, if you would. First off, you know, what happens now that the GTEC has said that they're still interest in mining, but kind of putting on the brakes. Has there been any discussion among your colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle of what now? And also, if you'd care to comment on right to work, whether it was the right thing for Wisconsin to pass that law.
Sure. And I know the gentleman also mentioned stewardship fund, too, which
he did,
I'm more
yeah.
than happy to touch on.
Please do.
But in terms of the mine up north, you know, I don't think that was, I mean, again, I wasn't around for that debate, so I can't comment in terms of, and that's not a cop-out either, I can't comment in terms of, you know, people saying that was the all-saving grace there or not. I don't think that's how you build necessarily an economy either, is based off one industry. So I don't know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but in my mind, I can't see it being pitched as the saving of northern Wisconsin. But again, it would have been a huge boom for the area in terms of economic development. I think we're pretty lucky, at least I am, in my district. You know, those people in southern Wisconsin say the north, and they kind of lump us all together.
Right.
But, you know, I consider myself north, but I don't consider myself the far north. And there is a stark difference between Barron County and Iron County. And so I think when we look at that, there's going to have to be a number of things that are addressed. I mean, how can you talk about certain economic development when there are huge swaths of land where you don't have broadband, you don't have cell service, you can't get internet, even in barely in some of the schools we have up here. So I think there's a valid argument to be made that there needs to be more basic infrastructure investment to allow continued development. And again, you plan your assets that we have. You know, what is that? That's tourism. We do kind of rely heavily on manufacturing. And so you continue to look at policies that can play off that, you know, protect tourism funding, you know, the tax credit for manufacturing that was in place before I took office. That was a good step. I know many industries around here that might have been their saving grace in terms of keeping the door open. And when you've got communities that rely on one employer, those are important. So I think we need to be taking an all-encompassing approach, not necessarily let's move one industry and all of a sudden that saves northern Wisconsin. In terms of the stewardship fund, you know, I came into this not knowing what the stewardship fund was all, and it just kind of blows my mind that it's a priority. Both sides of the aisle support the stewardship fund and its mission and what it's done over the years. But it blows my mind that if it's a priority, how come we're using debt to fund this program? It doesn't make sense to me in my mind in terms of doing business when we're paying, you know, $1.6 million a day to fund that. But I think it is worth the investment in terms of continuing to hold public land for public use. And I don't think it's going to be gutted entirely, and I don't know why those numbers are thrown out, because the governor may propose not funding the stewardship fund or buying land until 2028, but he can't hold future legislators to that. So I'm not sure what the intent was in terms of throwing that number out. But I don't see that going away, and I know there's talks amongst us to maybe not necessarily gut all funding from there. Again, it still authorizes $14 million for the Kittle Marine Springs Fish Hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can still find funding to focus on a lot of those public and private partnerships, because the fund doesn't just buy up huge blocks of land and holds them. And many times it works with municipalities and businesses to bring them together over projects that benefit all of us. So I would like to see some of that restored. And again, we'll know more when more revenue numbers come out. But I could see that changing a little bit. In terms of right to work, you know, the representative and I will obviously disagree. We had a debate for about 24 hours straight on that particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman also mentioned, which is a fair comment too, there's not a lot of union presence in northern Wisconsin. I don't think, again, whether it's the mine or right to work, that it's pitched as a save-all. But I think it continues to make us a better environment to do business. And I didn't see anywhere in the bill where it particularly strips money out of the hands of the middle class. All I saw was giving people the choice whether or not they want to participate in a union organization. So I think there's a lot of things that has taken place before I took office in terms of continual tax credit or revolving loan funds, things like that to continue to attract business. And I think we can continue to play off those into the future as we try and bring industry, especially to northern Wisconsin.
And Dana Wachs, you'd like to respond to play off of that?
Yeah, we heard testimony of Dr. Chaudhry from Marquette University. He's a well-known economist. And he testified that on average, workers will make about $5,800 less in right-to-work states than non-right to work states. So there is, even, and that extends even to people that have nothing to do with the union at all. That is a broad based economic fact that overall workers will make somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000 less in right to work states than in non-right to work states. You know, we had over 400 private businesses that came and lobbied not to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state. These businesses rely on trained workers and very skilled workers through these unions. These businesses came in and just about begged the Republicans not to pass that bill, but they passed it anyway, and that comes even after, in September and October of last year, the Republicans were saying that they would not pass right-to-work legislation. So I, you know, I'm not sure to say about that.
Let's take our final break. Gentlemen, we're talking about the state budget with two state lawmakers from western Wisconsin. We've got Romain Quinn. He's a representative, a Republican representative for the 75th Assembly District he lives in Rice Lake. And Democratic State Representative Dana Walks of Eau Claire. He represents the 91st Assembly District. Number is 800-228-5615. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about some changes to long-term programs in K-12 education. And that'll pretty much do it for the hour. Lots more to talk about, absolutely. So we're going to have some other lawmakers on, or perhaps these gentlemen back on the program to discuss it before all is said and done with the budget. I'm Rich Kramer. This is The West Side. We'll be back in just a bit.
This fall, WPR is sponsoring a holiday vacations tour to Australia with me, Jim Fleming. We'll see the Great Barrier Reef by glass-bottom boat and by helicopter. We'll learn about native plants and birds and go right to the heart of the subtropical rainforest. All airfare, hotels, and many meals are included. Registration is open now at wpr.org/travel.
Support for WPR comes from the Nelson Institute, presenting the 9th Annual Earth Day Conference, Hard Science, Tough Choices, Shaping the Future on a Rapidly Changing Planet, Monday, April 20th in Madison. Details at nelson.wisc.edu. Support also comes from Xcel Energy, committed to partnering with local communities to deliver safe, reliable energy and to promote economic development, support local organizations, and create employment opportunities. More at xcelenergy.com.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the governor's proposed budget and other legislation churning in Madison. Joined by two state lawmakers from western Wisconsin, Democratic State Representative Dana Walks of Eau Claire and Republican State Representative Romain Quinn of Rice Lake. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to take any more calls, and I do appreciate all the calls and questions that we've gotten so far. Gentlemen, we're close to the top of the hour, so we'll need to be brief on these different subjects. Otherwise, we'll have to leave something out, and everything is too important to leave out. So with that, Governor Walker's budget proposal calls for expanding the state's family care program statewide, while at the same time eliminating a program known as IRIS, that's I-R-I-S, which offers assistance to elderly and disabled adults with long-term care. Some have claimed that this combination, you know, will provide more efficient delivery of this kind of services, while advocates say it'll hurt this population. So, Romain Quinn, are you familiar with the IRIS program and the proposed elimination of it?
Yes, and I mean, I have friends, families in our community that we know. We all know people that benefit from this particular program. I think at this point, and we've discussed in our own caucus too, is that, you know, the expansion of family care and the potential elimination of IRIS, what is it even going to play out and look like?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so many details that still have to be worked out that we just don't know. I know that you still, federally, you have to have a self-directed option, and you have to have a managed care option. So it can't necessarily disappear entirely. But, again, the IRIS program, it's about giving people a basic quality of life. Those who are not lesser off but are, you know, handicapped in our society from participating like regular adults, I think it's a critical program, and I would, again, like to see that protected as well for those that are currently on it.
Excellent. Dana Walks, very briefly, if you could, the IRIS program. Kitty Rhodes has said that, you know, even if it goes away, she's going to work to have a self-directed option for people that need long-term care for families. Any thoughts on the proposed changes to long-term care?
Well, I think we have to provide for the folks that are hurt the worst in our society, and I believe Secretary Rhodes even indicated that she was unaware of these proposals, completely unaware herself until she read them in the budget. So you wonder, what is the policy behind this, that the secretary wouldn't even be aware of this? You know, in terms of health care, he's also cutting $15 million from senior care that forces seniors to enroll in more costly and really confusing Medicare Part D. That alone will cost Wisconsin seniors something around $600 to $700 a year right there. So it doesn't seem like we're providing for the least among us and the folks that need help the most.
No, I'll stay on you, Dana Walks. We are just minutes away from the end of the show. But thoughts on the Governor Walker's proposed budget for K-12 schools. Basically, if you boil it down, a cut of $150 per pupil for 2015 and early 2016, then increasing that funds, but school district people say that goes right to property tax relief, that really they're going to see an overall cut over the biennium of $135 per pupil. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we've got to stop cutting education. That's what we got to do. That's our future. And I don't know why we have to keep supporting this private education policy of this governor. I mean, this voucher school is just, you know, we can't afford these two systems like that.
And Romaine Quinn, very quickly, your thoughts on the proposed cuts and the expansion of the voucher program at the same time.
Yeah, schools in my district, I mean, rural schools in general, and Representative Walks knows those too. I mean, we just always inherently get the short end of the stick in terms of funding. You know, I have schools in my district that simply cannot afford to do a cut like this without cutting really to the bone. So I know a lot of us, at least in my caucus, this new revenue's come in and talked about trying to make the school districts whole again. But again, I do support the private voucher program because it shouldn't matter what building the student's in, they should get the best education possible. So, but again, you need to have the money for it if that's what you plan on doing. So I know a lot of us are looking into that.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. I wish we had more time for this discussion. Democratic State Representative Dana Walks represents the 91st District. He's based in Eau Claire. Republican State Representative Romaine Quinn of Rice Lake represents the 75th Assembly District. Thank you both for the conversation. Thank you very much to the listeners for calling in. Thanks to Team Westside for helping me put this program together. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.